And welcome. I'm Ryan.
I'm Kurt.
And we are December's Children. And today we're going to play the part of the album Coroners.
Yes, we'll be dissecting the album, picking it apart, telling you how it died, or whatever.
Who killed our albums? And today we've decided to take an album. This is going to be a series. And we decided what we're going to do to start this whole program off is do a very important album to us. Highly influential by a highly influential band, the Rolling Stones, and Exile on Main Street.
We're going to be telling you what went into the recording a little. We're not going to get too in-depth on that. You can find that information wherever. We're going to be talking about what we got out of it, what we heard, the arrangements, things like that. Things that are relevant to us.
Absolutely. And we've just heard the opening track to one of the greatest albums of all time, and it's known in rock and roll circles to be probably one of the best Stones albums ever, if not best albums, period.
I would agree with that.
So the opening track is Rocks Off. Now, we've got a few funny little stories about that particular song. If you want to talk about why we were influenced or how this band influenced us, we were going to do a cover of Rocks Off many years ago, and I I wish I had the clip of that.
It was a real fun time. How long did we spend trying to do just the intro?
All afternoon. And what was so tough about that? That's what I can't figure out.
Nothing.
So I do remember going, oh, yeah.
Because it would go, and then if we missed the timing or whatever, we'd have to start over again.
Right, and I probably messed up some of the words later on in the verse, and then we'd have to restart it.
Right, and this was in the days of recording on cassette, right?
Yeah, that was the Tascam. It was still in my parents' basement. The earliest incarnation.
We couldn't edit the things. We were doing it in one shot, one take stuff, so we had to come back and do it
right
hundreds of times.
Now, before we get into this album, I suppose we should take a little bit of time to introduce ourselves again. We are December's Children, and we are obviously influenced by the Rolling Stones. We actually named our group after their fifth album, December's Children. And why were we more influenced by the Rolling Stones, do you think, than the Beatles, say?
Because we're outsiders.
Yeah, you think so? More the bad boys? Well, we certainly weren't bad boys, that's for sure.
The Beatles were popular. The Beatles were more popular. They were the more popular of the two, so of course we picked the less popular.
So we were the modern equivalent of, say, hipsters.
Yeah, we were hipstery.
In the mid-90s, we were like hipster.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. We were the least hipster hipsters.
Yeah. And you know, and I don't mean this as a slight on us or a slight against the Stones, but another thing is that the Beatles were so talented.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, they were
a lot harder. They had a lot more complicated harmonies and things like that. To me, the Rolling Stones were less polished. They were more emotion. They were more garage band. And that was, we could emulate them a lot easier, at least at the beginning of our career.
Yeah. And I have to say it kind of spoke to me more listening to the Stones than the Beatles. The Beatles came later for me as far as what I was into. It was just kind of, it was dirtier and grungier a little bit, and I think it felt easier without being easy.
Yeah.
So I think that's what kind of
absolutely it. And Mick Jagger, I mean, he's a great vocalist, but he's not the world's greatest singer. It's just his style that does it. And I think I knew early on that I wasn't Elvis Presley. So, you know, I'm the lead singer, by the way, and Kurt over there is the lead guitar player for December's Children. But I knew that I could sound like that a little bit easier than Paul McCartney or John Lennon.
Yes.
So earliest influence by the Stones, at least for me, I believe, would be High Tide and Green Grass. That's the tape that my brother had, and he drove around in his old Impala, and we listened to that, and it's where I heard Time's on My Side and Heart of Stone. It kind of got influenced by that.
Yeah.
You and I, of course, would be brought together by Hot Rocks, which would be another album for another time. But we started to write songs like that, and then Exile comes. And at first, it was the funniest thing. I didn't quite get it. It's kind of like the same thing you get when you hear the Beatles' White Album. If you're used to I Want to Hold Your Hand and Please Please Me, it kind of was unsettling.
It's a big jump. If you go where you listen sequentially or you were alive at the time and you're listening in order, you can kind of evolve with them toward that. But when you just jump to it, it's kind of hard. I went from, with Hot Rocks, it was it was Side A.
Right.
The one with the older 60s stuff that I was into, and I listened to Side B and go, eh, it doesn't really do as much for me. I know some of the songs from Side A from the radio, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then listened to Side A, I really got into it, and I was like, I don't like this Stones later stuff, which later stuff was, you know, from 1968.
Right.
through 71.
The modern stuff was unsettling. Yeah, yeah. I get you.
But eventually I listened to Let It Bleed.
Right. Okay.
And You Got the Silver blew me away. My mind was blown.
Yeah.
That song.
I remember that. I remember that night because I do love that we had that that part of our childhood. Being Xennials, we still had to buy albums.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're at the cusp of all this technology, but we were still buying albums and still trading albums. And I do recall when I did get my hands on Let It Bleed. Of course, I liked Let It Bleed. Country Honk was amazing. And I got to You Got the Silver, and I'd hear, you know, that slide.
Uh-huh.
And then Keith, hey, babe. Yeah, skip it.
Yep.
And I skipped it for weeks. But one night I was kind of just falling asleep, just letting the album play. And then
when it kicks in.
And it kicks in. Mind blown. Mm-hmm.
And I think you played it for me and then did the same thing to me. Because I was like, all right, the song's fine. It's a good song.
Right.
And then that part. And I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay.
Yeah. So then we graduate to Exile on Main Street, which is the album we are going to be dissecting today. And it was different because I had never heard, outside of Tumbling Dice and maybe Happy, I had not heard a single song off of this album.
Right.
Never. So when I got my hands on that, Rocks Off starts it off. That is pretty cool. But the more you listen to this album, it has excellent replay value.
Well, I think for us, we were doing a lot of acoustic guitar playing.
Right.
And I think it wasn't the rockers, the electric stuff on the album that did it for me, at least. I can't speak for you necessarily, but... when you get to some of the songs later, like Sweet Virginia and Torn and Frayed, I heard those acoustic parts and I went, we can do that. We could do that right now.
Right.
Like I like could play some of the things just by hearing it. I knew that that was a, you know, if it was capo to two, that's a D. I know it's an E chord then.
Right, because we were just learning. I mean, when we first started to get into this Exile on Main Street, this band here, we were still basically recording songs with our voices as a guitar. You were just starting to pick up that guitar and starting to learn, and we were just it was just in the infancy of this band. So of course we're going to pick the easier ones.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, Sweet Virginia was the major one. I got to tell you, Exile on Main Street to me to this day means Sweet Virginia.
Yeah,
I mean that's the song that I think of, and it is by far the easiest.
I have to say, I think Sweet Virginia gave birth to this band in December's Children,
and it did.
Yeah, I think that's the fetus of the Stone of December's Children came from the Stones, Sweet Virginia.
Absolutely, and it went a little something like this. You know, I was always the country guy of the band. Yeah. You know, you just get that.
Yeah, and you feel like it's a laid-back country song.
Yeah.
But when the drums come in that second verse, that's when you hear the full thing. You hear what it can be, that it's not just a country song, it's country gospel.
It is
rock, blues, it's all of those things together.
I feel the party in this song in the background vocals.
Yep.
And that's what a good song and a great album will do.
Yep.
It'll make you a part of it. And the Stones did that here in Sweet Virginia. And you know what? It's got that great line too. You gotta scrape that shit right off your shoes. Oh.
I think another thing that was the fact that the Stones did country without knowing what country was.
Well, yeah, they're British.
So they essentially made it their stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that spoke to me a little bit because country wasn't a thing that I cared about. Because at the time, country on the radio was, you know, Achy Breaky Heart.
Oh, yeah.
Things like that. So you'd have to go back to hear the roots of this type of stuff.
Right.
You'd have to go back to Hank Williams and, you know.
Which we did our fair share of listening.
Yeah, and eventually we got there, and I think I got there through Sweet Virginia.
Isn't that odd? A couple of little British guys got you into deep roots American Appalachia country music. So.
Well, and the blues. Like that, I think a lot of people in the U.S. got into blues through British people.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I don't know how that all works, but it's such a cyclical across the Atlantic thing.
Yeah.
You know, they got into American blues, which got, you know, into the British music, which got us into British music, and now that's kind of coming back and forth.
They basically reintroduced us to our own stuff.
Yeah.
And when you say that this song is basically what made December's Children.
Yeah.
You know, it is. Keith Richards doesn't have the hardest harmonies, but they somehow are the best. They
just sort of a free, he just sort of does it.
And that's influenced the way you sing harmony, hasn't it?
I mean, interval-wise, I don't know, but you know, my voice is that way, but
you somehow end up doing those high lady parts, though.
Well,
I don't know how, you know.
Because that's what I think of when I think of the harmony part. I'm like, oh, what do I need here?
Yeah.
Well,
what would Keith do?
Part. Yeah.
So, and this song for sure is the song that developed this group. It was the song that gave us one of our most important things. It was the song that gave us gave us our milestone. So, I do recall, we were singing this song over and over again. We do it, you know, in front of a few friends, in front of a few girls, maybe a few parties. But we had never sang in front of my father, ever.
Yes. Yeah.
And I will still to this day, and I tell my own daughter that the day you can sing in front of your family, in front of your dad or your mom, that is the day that you have lost your inhibitions, I believe.
Yeah.
Unless you grew up singing with them. But I mean, if it's something, because you want their approval before everybody else's. So, and once you can break that, you are well on your way to be able to sing in front of anybody. Mm-hmm. So I do recall that we had never sang in front of my dad, but we needed some way to get our songs onto tape, onto cassette. We needed to record our stuff. At that time, we were still recording either through a pair of headphones, singing them, you know, if you sing through the ear hole, I mean, it's going to be a microphone. You know, use them that way. And we hadn't had any better equipment than just your run-of-the-mill Casio recorder or whatever my brother had in the basement. But one night, we had a couple of drinks, I believe, or maybe I did, and we went to the garage and I said, Dad, I want to get some recording gear. And now this is coming from a kid that had asked for electric guitars and all this stuff and always got it.
Yeah, yep, you sure did.
But never played it or practiced it like you had. And so he's probably already rolling his eyes. Okay, here's another thing he wants to do. And we just went for it. We just busted into Sweet Virginia. Yeah. And in my mind, I think it was terrific. And it must have been fairly good. Because I remember that, look, not bad. Not bad, Ryan. What do you guys need?
Yeah.
And of course, we had already circled what we needed. The Tascam recorder. We had the musician's friend already. Here, this is what we need. Got the credit card, ordered it up, and history was made from that song.
I have to say, the guitar-wise, it felt like the easiest step. And I don't know if it was... Part of it was just because I was kind of already playing that way. When I discovered sus chords, like adding you add a four, you subtract the two, whatever. You add the two. Doing that kind of felt natural to me. And there's so much of that in Sweet Virginia. There's so many little hammer-ons and things to the next chord that it kind of felt, it fell into my hands a little bit better than a lot of songs did. And I think that helped it become the first thing that we kind of did at every party. That's the song we would always play.
Oh, yeah. That was the opener.
Because we felt so much more comfortable doing it. It felt like that was our stuff, too.
Yeah. Oh, and to this day now, folks that haven't heard that song do think it's one of ours.
It still feels like one of our songs. Yeah. And it's probably because we write songs that sound like Sweet Virginia.
Yeah, or we try. I would still like to come up with that line that that Mick's got there. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to scrape her off your shoes. But, okay, so the next track, besides, we're kind of all over the place here, but we do want to talk about most of the tracks or some of the glowing ones here. This song, to me, is rock and roll. I mean, it's the Stones at their peak of what they should have been.
Yeah.
And I mean, just think about that, coming right out of the gate. Now, why do you think they chose to come out of the gate with Rocks Off instead of this one?
I think because it's a little simpler. Like, this one is almost too driving to start the album with, to get people... Personally, I might have started it with this song, with Rufus Joint.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because you want to set that tone for the album.
Because I like to do that. It may have been because the intro to Rocks Off is kind of more of an intro. This rips this joint kind of just starts.
Right. Okay. You know? And the opening track on a good album. See, the album is a lost art, as we mentioned earlier. The album it's just, there's digital downloads, there's YouTube videos, and it's, people don't make these works of art.
Because
you can
end up having what we had happen with Skeletons, where I came up with this track order, meticulously placed each song where it's supposed to go. And even some of the songs like Built Up were recorded to be the last song on the album.
Right.
And then the record company says, no, you should put your most popular songs first, second most popular, third most popular, third.
I still don't know about that.
The problem is that nobody listens to it as an album then. Right. And I suppose it is dead in that fashion, that the medium of album is kind of dead.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's a dumb idea. It's just that when you place things perfectly like that, when you think of it as an album, it kind of hurts a little when it's taken away from you.
Yeah, because that's one of our fun. That's one of the most fun parts about when we write an album is at the very end. It's usually 5 or 6 in the morning. We're going through album order and discussing how it should run. But the album, traditionally, the album opener should set the tone for the work.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think now, as I'm sitting here talking, I think Rocks Off does that, because Rocks Off, as opposed to Rip This Joint, is what the album is.
Yeah.
It isn't, because Exile on Main Street is not a hard driving album like Rip This Joint would indicate. Now, if you want to truly set the pace of that album, Rocks Off really has everything.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's even got that psychedelic every time. I mean, that has a foreshadowing of maybe Let It Loose.
Just Want to See His Face.
Or right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all in there.
Sort of a weird psychedelia post psychedelia type of thing.
Yeah. So I think that was a good move on the Stones' part, because had they open up with Rip This Joint, they punch you in the face, they throw a bunch of cold water on you.
And then they can't punch you in the face again.
They can't hit you in the face again.
There's no more punches left.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So with Rocks Off, you get hit in the face with Rip This Joint, and then, but hey, I'm already, you've been eased into it. Yep. So that's great. Now, the third track on the album is Shake Your Hips. Now, this is a cool tune. This has commercial licensing all over it.
Well, I mean, it's a cover of a Slim Harpo song.
Right.
And I don't know the original song.
I don't either.
At all. I suspect it's pretty similar, but I don't think it's played the same way. Because I know that Keith plays an open G a lot on this album. Like, almost every song that's not an acoustic-based song is an open G, which is an alternate tuning. I don't know how much people listening to this are going to know about guitar playing, but it's when you just tune the guitar differently. You tune it so when you strum all the strings without touching the frets at all,
right,
it'll be a G chord.
It's great tuning to learn, right?
Well,
like even for me, I could just strum a couple of bars.
It is and it isn't. If you want to learn how to play guitar a normal way, you probably don't want to do that. If you're just going to be strumming stuff, you can do that.
Okay.
Slide guitar players do it far more often than like Keith plays it as rhythm parts and as like chunkier chords, whereas most people who play an open G would do it with slide guitar.
Okay, now Keith is an open G right here.
Yes. Yep.
And I just want to get this out there too. If you want to learn more about alternative tunings and songwriting and structure and things like that, we will have other podcasts available on our Patreon page. If you want to donate to that, well, you'll receive insider information, I guess.
Yeah. He plays in open G, capoed at 2 on that song, I think.
Okay.
If my memory is correct. So it's in A.
Okay.
So it's a standard blues key, but he plays it differently, which is kind of an interesting way to do it.
Okay. And do you think that's Keith on there? That's not Mick Taylor.
That's Keith playing the main part there. Because you can hear Mick Taylor's parts later.
Okay.
You can't hear it here, but because there's just a lot of saxophone.
And see, there you go, but just, this is a cool song.
Yeah, you can hear it. The little,
now, as a Stones fan, as a Stones purist, I always loved the original members of the band. Brian Jones, of course, had passed on, and I'm Mick and Keith all the way. Mick and Keith and Charlie, a lot of folks who are not quite as married to the Stones, they recognize more so, I have to admit, I don't, but maybe I should, the contributions of Mick Taylor to the album Exile on Main Street.
Exile, I don't think, is a Mick Taylor album as much. He's on it.
Yeah.
I don't. But he's not as prominent on it, weirdly, as he is earlier and later, because I think, I don't know if Keith was just suddenly out of his heroin stupor at this point or something, but he's not much on Let It Bleed, but on Sticky Fingers, Mick Taylor is all over it. There are songs with no Keith. And they might tell you that Keith is on it, but he's not on it.
But he's
Moonlight
not.
Mile, he's not on.
Wow.
Winter, I don't think. No, that's on Goat's Head Soup. That's later. Yeah. But Yeah, there are many songs in that era that Keith's not on at all, and you can kind of tell because it doesn't have that feel. And I mean, I kind of learned to play guitar from Keith Richards, so it's easier to hear for me to hear when it is when it's Keith and when it's not.
Oh, sometimes I think Keith is on our albums. I mean, yeah. we call Kurt the incidental genius. Did you learn your incidentals from?
It's better
from
than Kurt? Being accidental.
Yeah, absolutely. Shake Your Hips was a cover song, and they did that right off, you know, third song in the album. They're doing a cover. Yep. That's kind of cool. Next tune on the album is actually called Casino Boogie, which I think's got a great groove to this one, too.
Yeah.
And it's really similar style to Shake Your Hips.
Well, you know, being blues-based, I think they did a lot of jamming, and songs would come out of it. And jamming the blues was kind of a thing they would do. This song is apparently inspired by the fact that they recorded a lot of the album in the south of France, in the Riviera, where there are a lot of casinos and things. So
okay.
That's why Tumblin' Dice and Casino Boogie are both on the same album.
Boy, that's cool.
Yeah. And this one, I think, showcases Keith's higher part. Right here. Yeah, you can hear that.
Yeah.
And it's just a fun higher part.
It's Keith. He's really the only one that kind of does that.
Yeah.
But next to you now, or I mean, you try, right? I mean, there are songs where it's there.
It's not on purpose.
You know what's odd? Some of our newer songs, and we'll be talking about our band, December's Children, and some of our latest albums, but when I hear you and Kim sing together on some of the harmonies, it almost takes both of you to make that Keith sound, but you do.
I would you know? Agree with that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you hear our song sure. Like Plastic Woman. And the harmonies there, that is Stones.
Yeah,
every step of the way. So, Casino Boogie, I always thought that was a cool jam.
It's a fun song. It's kind of album filler. It's a little forgettable.
It is, but that's the thing about Exile on Main Street and why it is such a great album. Outside of Tumbling Dice, there really isn't any singles there.
Yeah,
it
there's
is,
no standout. This one's obviously the hooky single from this.
Yeah,
it's just kind of a bunch of really solid songs.
Every song is a spoke in the wheel on this one.
Yeah, and it all fits together.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing about the album that I think made it what it is, as opposed to being one of the classic.
And song layout. What we haven't talked about is even in our generation, we bought the CD, right? Mm-hmm. You had 18 songs right in a row. When this first came out, 1972, it was actually on 4 different vinyl records. And I do love how they had kind of set this up in segments here. If you look at the first side, it was Rocks Off, Rip This Joint, Shake Your Hips, Casino Boogie, and Tumbling Dice.
All electric, bluesier form songs.
Right.
By blues form, I mean a 1-4-5 sort of. I mean, you know the blues when you hear it, the structure of a blues song. And all of them kind of have that same thing. They resolve from the five.
Sure. And then the second half here, the first of disc one would be Sweet Virginia, Torn and Frayed, Sweet Black Angel, and Lovin' Cup. And at the end, Lovin' Cup is a little bit different than the first three. And I think that kind of gets you into what's going to be side
True.
Three on the second
album. And it's funny because it is, but it isn't as different. It is kind of a natural next step because it starts off with the piano.
Right.
Because I remember listening to this and hearing the piano play. And thinking, I don't need to hear this.
I skipped this one. I thought Charlie Brown, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody does.
Yep. But then you listen into it and you go, oh, okay. It's a little gospel-y almost.
There's Keith.
And then you go, oh, the acoustic guitar is here. And it's still an acoustic song.
Yep.
It's just that the piano is the acoustic instrument that's driving it.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful song, too.
Yeah.
What a beautiful buzz.
We recently covered it
in
some of our gigs. I don't know that we did it the justice it deserves, but I don't think we butchered it.
No, so we did not butcher it, my friend.
Yeah.
Here we go.
And it is weirdly structured, and we didn't I didn't recognize this at all until Mark brought this up when we were arranging it for the live show, how they add an extra beat or two in what you think it is going to be. And I think you noticed this because of the vocals.
Trying to sing it, yeah.
Where you would come in too early because you're like, okay, this is where it starts.
Get
nope, there's
drink.
Actually two more drum beat fills. Yeah.
Yep. And a fall down drunk. Oh, yeah. Yep. That was difficult. And I spent years singing that song.
Yep.
Just singing along to it. But you don't ever think about how that's going to transpose into an actual band.
You don't time it when you're not listening. When you're not just listening to the already recorded song, you're not thinking, okay, rest, 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 go.
Yeah.
Because it's five drum fill beats, which doesn't make any sense.
It shouldn't happen.
When you're playing it, but...
Right. But and then the more you play it, the more you play it, I guess we get kind of...
Yeah, I mean, you get comfortable with it eventually,
yeah.
But...
Yeah. Yeah. But I love this song, too. Of course, this is the big single, right?
Yep.
Now, this is open G all the way, right?
Yeah, capoed at 4, so it's in B.
And I also love that the Stones use... of choirs.
Yeah.
Yep. And it also makes it very difficult to cover songs like this and do them justice.
Yes.
When you don't have that.
And the horns. Don't forget horns. Anytime the Stones song has horns in it, we lose a little there, too.
Right, because we can do an acoustic version of I Got the Blues, but if you don't have that horn part, you've got nothing. You know.
When we get to that album, that'll be...
We'll be doing Sticky Fingers. We're gonna do the from that era, which they say is probably the Stones' best era. You're getting
without
into
question.
Sticky Fingers, Let It Bleed, Exile on Main Street. Did I say Beggar's Banquet?
Nope.
Oh, yeah, Beggar's Banquet. Because, and even Some Girls, if you want to get into it.
Well, yeah, I mean, once you get into that, you get into a sort of a different feel.
Yeah.
It feels
different. They're a different band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because... I don't know how much we want to talk about just the Stones' whole oeuvre right now, but it is kind of a... There's a real drop-off after Exile on Main Street. When you get to Goat's Head Soup, still pretty good, but it loses a lot. And then it's only rock and roll, and you start going downhill a little bit where it's just not quite the same.
Mm-hmm. But that comes with age, too. I mean, as songwriters ourselves, you really start to run out of inspiration. Or you start to feel that you've done it all before. That's the tough thing. And in our songwriting podcast, we're going to talk about ways that you can try and help break the writer's block that you'll get. You become your own worst enemy and how to avoid that. So.
Well, and I think we try to, more than some people, I'm sure, but I'm sure everybody does to some extent, try to branch out and try to be different because you're kind of bored with it. Your fans might not be. There's only one band I know that has never tried to do that, and that's AC/DC.
There you go.
Has never tried to do anything else.
That's absolutely correct.
And they've succeeded at it.
Yep.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But hey, more power to them, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe that's just the songwriter mentality. I was just talking to Kim, background singer, harmony singer in our band. I'm a disc jockey on the radio, and I work with a lot of them.
You jockey discs?
I jockey discs. And... what sets me apart from the other guys is their brains are wired in a way where they'll tell the same jokes day after day, maybe for years, because they know that people only listen for 15 minutes at a time.
That's a good point.
So that I feel that I have to do a different joke, a different thing every single time that microphone is on.
In case one person is listening again.
Right. I can't handle that they might think I would be repeating a joke, but these guys don't care. And so I think maybe AC/DC's got some of that radio disc jockey mentality. They don't care.
It could be. Yeah.
You know, I get so bored with things. I always want things to be fresh. But there are ways to break out of that. And again, if you visit our Patreon page, we'll have our songwriting podcast up there. And for exclusive, there's exclusive content to members.
And there'll be a lot more content on songwriting. The podcast is called On Songwriting.
Right.
And it's essentially going to be more about us than it is about the albums. This episode of this podcast is mostly about us too,
right?
Because of the album that we're talking about,
right? Because this one is highly influential. But in subsequent episodes here, we'll be talking more about maybe even albums we don't like and why we don't like them, and albums that mean absolutely nothing to us.
I'm actually looking more forward to albums we don't like,
right?
Because I think it'd be more fun to just tear an album apart,
right?
And then maybe realize that it's not as bad as we think it is.
Right.
That it's not poorly done. It's just that it's not our thing.
Right. And, you know, going back to the Stones, you think of Tattoo You. Now, that is not a critically acclaimed album, but I've kind of gone through the songs on there.
It did have one of their biggest hits of all
time. Right. It had Start Me Up on there. But then when you start to go through the others, well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really not that
bad. Yeah. I like a lot of the songs. I just... It feels really disjointed is the only problem with Tattoo You.
Right. And we've done that. Our album On The Mend was, we had 15 or 16 songs done. My brother comes home, Scotty, who we'll talk about in later episodes.
He might make an appearance.
He might make an appearance too. But we wrote, I think, 13 songs with him. And rather than do a 13 song album of all brand new material, we decided to slap them with the other 18.
Put them all together.
And make that giant album. But it's funny how an album done right will feel like a complete work, a book, an album. Oh, what's such a glorious thing. And we didn't do that with On The Mend. It just sounds like a greatest hits compilation or something, or not greatest hits, but a compilation.
Yeah, and we could have, had we had time and energy and forethought, we could have put all of these songs together and made it an album, and it wouldn't have been a problem.
Right.
But that takes a lot of work, and that would take a mixing them... in the same way, putting them all in the same, under the same umbrella of sound.
Yeah. And then and then we get bored, and then, you know, there's a shortcoming of our band there, but let's move on back to the Rolling Stones here, and one of our favorite albums of all time, if not the greatest album. I think VH1, when they did the countdown, this is what, number 5 for the best albums of all time? Of course, they got to put the Beatles on there. It's up there, because Exile on Main Street is glorious. And here's another one we like to try and play anyway. Now, to me, that's America somehow.
Yeah.
These Brits.
It's recorded in France.
By Brits.
By Brits. And it just sounds like the American South in a way.
Like it does.
Not deep South necessarily, but...
You know, I'm getting visions of Route 66. I'm just...
Yeah. And maybe, you know, the Stones were hanging out with a lot of American musicians. Graham Parsons was all over the place in this era with Keith. They were basically the same type of person. Except Graham Parsons was a lot...
Stranger?
Yeah. He died a lot easier.
He what?
He died a lot easier.
Oh, easier.
Than Keith.
Sure. Right. So now this song is about a band.
Yeah.
Is that Keith?
Yeah.
Does the guitar player get restless? That's Keith Richards.
I would imagine.
I think the whole song is about Keith.
My favorite part, 100% on this song, is the pedal steel.
Oh, the pedal steel solo. We'll be getting to that shortly.
And you can hear it throughout the whole song. And it doesn't do a lot through most of it, but it's just there and it's beautiful. There's also the B3 organ part.
Oh, yeah.
That you can hear at the top end, too.
And here we go. It's coming.
I just want to listen to it.
I know.
Go buy the album if you want to listen to it.
And I tell you what, we talk about replay values, and this is why this is such a great album. You and I have listened to these songs a million times. We've tried to write these songs a million times, and here we are, just wanting to listen.
And I think part of that, too, comes from the fact that you can always hear something else in it. Something you didn't hear before.
Yeah.
And there are bands today and a lot of producers today who want to clean up an album. And I get that impulse. That's totally fine. It's probably makes for a better hit song. But I really like a densely layered song where there's a lot of guitars or a lot of instruments doing something. And even if the things are just strumming a chord or just holding a note on a B3 or whatever, just to prop the whole album up.
Yeah.
Just the whole song.
I absolutely agree with you. And if you start to listen to her albums, you'll see. But this is distinct from the Wall of Sound of Phil Spector.
Oh, yeah.
We do not want... That Wall of Sound, to me, is it hurts.
Yeah. It's,
I get the ear fatigue and I just can't handle it.
And especially when it's compressed and things. Because it gets to be just noise at the... Just too much... top end noise to all of it. You want to hear that. You want to hear each individual thing, but you don't want anything to stand out too much. That's how.
There's the mix. There's the rub tough, right there.
It's tough mixing that. It's not easy at all. And I think, was it Glenn Johns or Andy Johns? One of the Johns guys. One of the guys who recorded this album.
Okay.
The one who was in France doing the recording. He developed a serious drug problem during this, which I don't think should surprise anyone, because I'm sure there were just bags of heroin just laying around. But I assume that part of that came from having to record these things and get all of this stuff down. And the mixing process would have been a real pain.
It was Andy Johns.
Was it Andy Johns?
Yeah.
So I knew it was a Johns.
Yeah, but hey, you're right on.
Because Glenn did stuff with the Stones too.
Okay. Huh. But yeah, you're the one that predominantly does all the mixing, so you would understand the work that he had to put in.
Yeah,
for that.
Well, our stuff is not quite as complicated because we recorded it too, so I know what is going to be there.
Right.
Whereas I think with Andy Johns and probably whoever else was engineering and helping with mixing, they weren't necessarily involved in all of the overdubs all the time and hearing what they wanted and what they didn't. Because we're sort of ruthless dictators of our music. You know, I can just, if Yen plays something really cool, but I don't really care for it, I can just cut it out, and I probably would if it didn't fit the song. If it's my stuff, that's a lot harder to do.
It's a lot harder.
Something I played.
Yeah. And I hear the song, let's see, what was it? Still I'm Gonna Sing, the whale sounds that you put on there.
Sure.
Yeah.
the lap steel. Yeah.
The lap steel. They sounded like whales to all of us.
Yeah.
And believe you me, it was tough to try and tell you that.
Well,
but you were very gracious and said, you know what? Yeah.
I do understand, because it didn't really work.
Right.
And that if I thought it worked really well, it would have been a lot harder to get me to cut that. But
right.
Sure.
Sweet Black Angel now. Another song we try and do.
Yeah, it's harder to do.
Well, to me, when I was listening to Sweet Black Angel years ago in my headphones, it was always so powerful. When they got her in chains, when they got her in, whoa, got her in chains. You got to practice that movement.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to practice it, just like trying to do The Weight by the Band.
Right. You have to listen to it, dissect it, and then work on it, which is not something we're prone to do.
And it's such a simple song, and I just don't know. We've never been able to capture this mood. I just love this song. And this, to me, is why I love the Stones. This album.
Yeah. And it's the showcase of different genres and different styles while not being un-Stones-like.
Right.
Is what is magical about it.
Right. Because a lot of folks that I talk to, especially our age, would say, you hear these albums, or you think of the Rolling Stones, what do you think? Satisfaction, or you think Time Is On My Side, and you just don't.
They think Time Is On My Side.
Kidding. They probably think Start Me Up Now. I know what I would have thought years ago. It would have been Time Is On My Side. Mm-hmm. But they don't know this. They do not know this side of the Stones. And I wish they did, because then they would not only, they would respect them a lot more, but they'd also see where we're coming from.
Right.
I can't tell you how many people I've said, hey, you know, we're highly influenced by the Rolling Stones. We share our records with them. I don't hear any Stones. Well, because you don't know the Stones.
Well, and that's funny, because I have, it's probably 50-50, the people who go, oh, okay, well, it doesn't really sound like Stones, and people who are like, oh yeah, I hear that for sure. Because I've had multiple people tell me that, and maybe it's just because our sound is influenced enough, like your vocals by Mick and my guitar by Keith, that we do end up sounding like them no matter what we play genre-wise. But if you aren't as familiar with them, maybe you don't, you only know a few songs, whatever, you only think of that. You only think, oh, well, it's going to sound like Start Me Up or some arena rock band.
Right.
But then that's not what they do all the time.
So. Right. Another thing that the Rolling Stones did since early on, and what's what we do now, and you can tell, one, we have a big influence by the Rolling Stones, not only sound-wise, but structure of album-wise, and that is by doing this. And that is including one song by the lead guitar player. Sometimes it's more. I mean, we have done more.
Well, yeah, sometimes Keith sings more than one song.
Right.
Too, occasionally.
But we always... And that's Keith Richards' lead. And Mick and
this was a single, too.
Yep. So. And Mick is singing background.
Yeah, you can hear it.
Yep. Yeah. And I wonder what that
was.
You
can really hear it here. Because that Baby Keep Me Happy was the last one.
Yeah, that's unadulterated Mick right there. But because of that.
This was still early in Keith's solo vocal phase, too, because he had done part of Something Happened to Me Yesterday.
Right. Between the buttons.
And he had done You Got the Silver, but I think that was it.
I think you're right about that.
They did do a version of Gimme Shelter with him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Too. Yeah. But oh, you're right. There wasn't anything else, was there?
I don't think so. I don't think there was anything on Sticky Fingers that was his. No.
But then they started to kind of do that. And then, of course, we picked that up and always have to have a Kurt song or two.
Yeah, sometimes we do a little too much Stones.
Yeah, I think
we're
so.
A little too Stones influenced. Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, and you can hear that he's not a good singer.
No, but he's strong vocally here.
But yeah, it's good, and he's pushing it. He's really pushing his limits on it. But I think that's what makes him good, is that he's not doing it as a, like, I'm a good singer. It's more like, this is meaningful to me. This means something to me.
This is the feeling of this song. Yeah. And I think that is what we try to capture. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You and I are, neither one of us are going to go on The Voice anytime soon or American Idol, but...
Really? Why not?
What we do and how we do it is it's unique. And that's all that really matters, as long as we can get a point across. And that's what the Stones did on Exile Main Street, for sure. Now, one of the stinkers on the album...
All right, that was good.
My eyes had to roll around my head 5 times here before I decided to say it, but would be Turd on the Run. But, you know, the more I listen back, it's...
I learned to like this song. Never loved it. Still don't. But I learned to like it. I like playing it. Playing it is a lot of fun.
But again, spokes on the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
If you took all the spokes out, the wheel collapses in on itself. This song needs to be there just as much as any of the other ones.
Yeah.
I would... Turd on the Run... the weakest songs on the album, as far as I'm concerned, would probably be Turd on the Run. And do you know what I'm... Do you know what I'm saying next?
Yep, sure. Just want to see his face.
Yeah, right here. Like, what is this?
It's not really a song.
Like, why did they put this on the album, do you think?
Because I think it sounds cool. It does sound cool. That's a cool sound. Because it has that almost that Phil Spector Wallace sound thing going on behind. Because there's no differentiation between all the instruments in the back. But it's got that nice Wurlitzer.
Yeah, if you're looking for a song, though, with a hook and a chorus, this is not your tune.
Something you can sing along to? Not really it.
They're just jamming.
Yep.
You know, this is... I suppose this would be the Rolling Stones equivalent of Beatles number 9, Revolution number 9. Number 9.
Probably a little bit
Only better, I have to say.
Well, I think it's less meaningful as... Like, because Revolution number 9 had a reason to exist. Like, they did it with a reason in mind. Not necessarily. It didn't catch me. I think a lot of people get it. And I think they tried to do something with it, meaning-wise. But this song, I think, was just them jamming, and I think they caught it, and it just has a cool thing. It has a vibe that works with the album.
You know, I like that you say that. It's just them jamming, and they captured it. How many times as a band, as songwriters, do we just play?
Yep.
And we're just trying to... Just trying to, you know, hash some things out, trying to get a melody out, and it's recorded, and it gets lost to history, and it's gone. And nobody ever gets to see that side of us. You know, the Ryan and the Kurt and Scott, they don't get to meet us. But, you know, this is like being the fly on the wall during Exile on Main Street. So, if you look at it that way, I think I'd kind of change my mind a little.
Recording-wise, one of the interesting things I think about this is it sounds like the vocals were all recorded in a room with a distant mic.
Yep.
Because I don't think that's artificial reverb or like a chamber or anything. I think it's just a distant mic in a room.
And it's more gospel right there. I mean,
Yep.
I still don't know how this band, from Great Britain, ends up sounding like a deep Southern gospel group. That's amazing.
Well, I think part of it is their love of the blues.
Yeah.
Just led almost directly into R&B.
And another great song of the album. I do remember just a small December's Children's story here. Not really December's Children, but Ryan Curtin, our friend Casey, story. He had gotten his Mazda and he'd gotten a set of subwoofers. Now, back in 1997, when he first got his license, we weren't what you call up on the latest trends of music. I mean,
what?
Yeah, we didn't have any.
We weren't listening to Nelly?
We weren't listening to Nelly. We weren't listening to Snoop Dogg. We were not listening to any of that. So it's interesting, at the time, the subwoofers were just starting to get big. Everybody had them, their trunks, boom, boom, boom. And they would find the deepest rap track that they could to go around town and blare. What we had is the Rolling Stones. And we had to try and find songs that had the biggest bass out there. And this was all we had to test Casey's subwoofers with.
It's a great song.
It is. But we thought we were so cool, man. And you know what? Looking back, I think we might have been. And we just didn't know it. Yeah.
Well, we were way hipstery doing that. I guess.
The kids now would think those guys were really cool.
Yeah, maybe. We'd be cool now, maybe.
Listen to that bass off. I mean, got such a great groove. This is Ventilator Blues, by the way. Yeah. Moyeda.
Yeah.
Voice.
And it's funny because this is one of the only minor blues songs, but then this part is not really bluesy. Oh, and those horns too.
This is a great song.
Yeah. That is good.
Oh man, I'm glad we're dissecting this album. I think I'm gonna have to listen to this album in its entirety tonight. So you get this raw, raw, dark energy from them right here, and then you get that gospel, just want to see his face, and then you move on to this beautiful little gem.
This is by far my favorite song of the Stones.
Really?
Yeah, easily. With the horns, when the horns come in later.
Yeah.
Nothing like a good horn group.
And I know that you've probably been trying to write this type of riff, right, since you heard it?
Yeah.
And I think you came close on our Slipping Through Your Fingers. I think that is your Let It Loose, as far as riffs go.
I wish. I wish it was.
In your mind, you still haven't done it.
Oh, no, not even close.
Right. And that is important, though, because that keeps you going.
Yeah.
You're gonna wait for your Let It Loose. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Drum's gonna come in. Come on, Charlie. Let's hit it. And the Stones don't have a lot of pretty ballads. I mean, you could say, I Got the Blues.
Yeah. I think I would probably say Angie is one of their like most ballady songs.
Yeah. But even when they do, it's not a love song. The Stones.
Yeah.
I Got the Blues is not a love song. Angie isn't. I mean, it's not a happy love song.
No.
And then you get slower ones, more ballads like Time Waits for No One. That song terrifies me.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because you really start thinking, time can tear down a building or destroy a woman's face.
Yep.
Hours are like diamonds, don't let them waste. Oh, no, man, I'm wasting my time. Come on, Stones, give me something that...
Stop doing that.
Yeah, so if you're looking for soul-soothing stuff, you're really not going to get a lot of it in Stones. But if any album comes close, it's this one. Because of this song, Torn and Frayed, Sweet Black Angel... Just some grooving Stones music.
Yeah. And I feel like the inspiration for a lot of these songs ended up being the vocal group. Like the three, I don't know their names offhand, but there were at least three people they brought in to do background vocals. And they were like a gospel vocal group.
Yeah. And harmonies can do so much.
Let's hear that. Because just that, adding that turns it into something else.
There's the horns.
Yeah. I think it's after this part when the big horn flourish comes in. That's probably after the breakdown. So.
Yeah.
podcast is a lot of cut, so good.
You've got two Stones fans reigniting what made them Stones fans. You know,
because like the guitar part is not anything really special, you know. At the beginning, it has it's through a Leslie cabinet, which is a spinning speaker,
right?
But like later on, it's just a nice little flourish, little hammer-ons and things that he's just flourishing with. And that piano, oh god, the piano though. I think that's Nicky Hopkins playing the piano too.
Wow.
There's nothing better.
I don't think there is. Now
there's nothing in the world better than it. There's a lot of things that come close. There's little better.
You know, that song could have ended the album. You know, it would have been a great album ender.
Yeah.
I think. here was another single.
Yeah, and then you get into rock again.
Now they're back to rock.
Now they're like, we're going to end this with some Stones rock.
But they're going to throw one more gospel tune at us.
Well, of course they are, but...
Yeah, All Down the Line, that was on the radio a little bit. I mean, I had heard of this song when I first got this album. You wouldn't hear it anymore.
No.
You know, this is 20 years after we got this album.
And it's a really cool straight-ahead rock song. No nonsense, no frills. It just is what it is.
This is going reminiscent of Rocks Off and Ripped His Joint from the start of the album.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of going back. But another song that will actually... now they're going to go more blues.
Yep.
And now this is a Robert Johnson song.
It's a Robert Johnson song, yeah.
And I love to play this song if I could ever remember the words, but it doesn't even matter. We've done this live. Hadn't sung it in 20 years. We did it at a bar in Grand Forks, and we're like, every time I'm walking on down the street, that's all you need to know. Yep. Some pretty mama.
Yep.
And just do it over and over
and
again.
It's so
Nobody
different.
Cares.
It's so different than Robert Johnson's version.
Yeah. This is an example of a cover done right.
This makes me think of a smoky blues club, song. It's one of the few that does it on this album. Because it just feels like it could be Sweet Home Chicago. It could be anything like that. It's just...
And you're going to hear some harmonica by Mick.
Yep.
I mean, he is a great world-class harmonica player. A lot of people don't think about him that way.
And I think he's playing the harmonica through an amp.
Because
I think there's a part where there's occasionally when he switches from harmonica to vocals that you can hear him singing through the harmonica microphone.
And
it has kind of a cool sound to it.
See, now it's stuff like that that make albums so great, especially before the days of the polish, when you get to put on the headphones and you hear all these little gems.
Some
like
of the
that.
Little accidents or little mistakes.
Yeah.
Those are fun.
And you just don't hear mistakes anymore. But and that's kind of what's fascinating about this era in music. We're able to record these albums and get them out there. And anybody can do it now. It's so great. It's a great time to be alive, and you're going to get more of the raw music that has been missing in the industry for like 30 years.
Yeah, I think one of the lost arts in recording music is determining what needs to be redone and what doesn't. We are bad at it. Let me tell you, we're bad at figuring out what we need to record and what we don't.
Okay.
Because there are little mistakes you can make that sound really great. Oh God, here we go. Sorry, the song started.
So you're saying that sometimes we maybe redo songs that probably didn't have to be redone?
No, we don't do things that we should be redone, and we
redo things that don't need to be done.
We rarely do that. We rarely redo. We do a lot of first take stuff, and it's probably the downside. That's probably one of our biggest weaknesses. If I'm giving my interview right now,
right,
one of our biggest weaknesses is redoing things that should be redone.
But
fixing mistakes that are pretty big. But small mistakes, you don't need to fix them.
But God help us, I think, I wonder if that isn't such a Stones influence.
100%.
We didn't care for the polish. We just wanted to get that feeling out.
It's all about the energy. If you get the energy, I think you can still make a really great song.
Absolutely.
Even with mistakes.
And you go in 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 takes, by that time, you don't feel that song anymore.
And I think even the times that we do that, you can just take a long break, come back and do it again, and just do it in that first take.
Yeah.
And see what you get.
Yeah.
But
and again, that'd be another great topic for our songwriting podcast when we talk a little bit about that more in depth on the recording. But
Shine a Light, man.
Shine a Light. And we used to sing this one too. It was one of our favorite a cappella. And hearing two two young pubescent teenagers try and sound like a choir of ladies here.
I just wonder how much gospel, how did so much gospel get into this album?
I know.
They didn't do it before or since.
Right.
There's no other Stones album that has this much gospel feel to it.
No, in fact, I dare say maybe the only one that would come close after would be Love Is Strong album, Voodoo Lounge.
And Voodoo Lounge, yeah.
Because of Blinded by Rainbows and stuff like that. Maybe. I mean,
yeah,
we're talking
a little,
close.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
and again,
like,
that's probably the influence of the background vocalists.
Right.
You know, because you can hear them in this. Doesn't get better than that.
It doesn't.
These songs don't. Nothing gets better than these songs.
Right. They're so well constructed.
Mm-hmm. And they're not. And they're not thought out. I guarantee the Stones didn't sit down and go, okay, what do we need here? We need to do this, this, and this,
no.
And like plan anything out. They just did it.
Yep.
And that's sort of a magical thing that you can't reproduce. You can't set out to do it.
Right. If they tried to record this album with modern technology, it wouldn't be the same.
It wouldn't work. No. And if you tried to do a full cover of this album, you couldn't. It wouldn't sound good. You'd have to do it differently.
No. Yeah. Yeah. You have to try and make it your own. But I guess that kind of brings us to our last song on here. If I had thought about it a little bit, I'd like to have played in some of our songs versus some of these songs. Because when you got to Let It Loose, there we have Pick It On Up.
Yeah.
And
yep, that was definitely
some,
Let It Loose influence.
Some
sure.
of the influences there and how that goes. And I before I got sidetracked here, you were talking about the backgrounds, the harmony singers and stuff like that. How much does harmony add? When you think of this band and what we did up until Journey's End, Heaven, Hell, and the Journey's End, which was just you and me and Mark, sometimes mm-hmm. Scotty, we just didn't quite have it. And then you started to be able to be quite the harmony singer yourself. And then we get Kim in the group and we started to arrange more harmonies. And the way we sound now on Quality Blend, it sounds so much better than it would have just me straight vocal.
Right.
Because back in the early days, you didn't even try. I didn't even try. We did not try harmonies hardly at all because it wasn't
our
strong
suit. Well, harmonies, we didn't know what they were either.
Right.
A lot of the time we spent without really thinking about what a harmony would do.
Right.
We thought, oh, you double the vocals on the chorus,
yep.
and that's what a harmony vocal is.
Yep.
But I think as we went through, I realized you needed to do a harmony, like an actual harmony. So I tried, but, you know, it was a little hit or miss.
Yeah.
but with Kim, the thing I like is that she can focus on that and come up with a good part, and I can just
play
back
off it
up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, play off of it.
Like
bit.
On Cigarettes, the way you two sound.
Yep. And Lord, I'm not the only one. I think it makes it a lot easier to come up with a thing when you can focus on that.
Yeah, and we never knew where I can do it too. I can sing harmony if somebody tells me exactly how to do it. I'm just not going to write it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that definitely helps. But we got one more song here. Now this is the final track on Exile on Main Street, and it's called Soul Survivor.
And it's such a weird closer.
I agree with you 100%. They could have ended with Let It Loose. They could have ended with Shine a Light.
Yeah.
I'd have to say those two.
But I think it's sort of like having a little bit of dessert. Like you had this great meal. You're just going to have a little dessert.
Does
a little palate cleanser
to
get you back to even.
Kind of lightens the mood a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not a great song. It's not a standout song. It doesn't do anything different. But it does. One thing I noticed, and when it gets to the chorus, we'll talk about it, but I'll point it out, but it has that the Stones thing. It sounds like a Rolling Stones song, what a stereotypical one.
Okay.
Later, and they hadn't done that. It didn't exist up until this
song.
In
this album.
Yeah, because none of the albums before it had that sound. Maybe Street Fighting Man and Jumpin' Jack Flash and stuff. That sort of feel should be right here.
Yeah,
that's the key move.
And he used it ever since.
Yeah. Since this point, that's been the main thing. Because I don't count Street Fighting Man because he does that same move, but it's in open E or open D, whatever it is on the album. I don't count it because it's in a different tuning, so it has kind of an extra string on it. This is just the that sus.
Oh man, and you do that in a lot of her songs too. And that's when you hear the Stones.
Yeah, and that's when I'm trying to do a Stones thing. Like that's on purpose.
Yeah, you know what? I dare say this almost leads itself to go back and listen to Rocks Off again. Like, okay,
yeah,
it's a loop, it's a circle. This album,
yeah, because Rocks Off kind of starts with a similar move.
Yep. Yeah. It certainly does.
It's not the same, but it is a similar move.
Jam. Oh, yeah. So that brings us to the end of our first Album Corner podcast, and we've tried to take apart all that is Exile on Main Street. And I guess in this first part, this first episode of the series is more or less to meet the band as well, meet Ryan and Kurt, and I guess just you and me this time. But
yeah.
What kind of makes us tick and why this album influenced us and how it did.
There should be more guests eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of how first podcast episodes start, a little rough.
Right.
Just the two of us get a baseline.
Right.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. But the Exile on Main Street, I highly suggest it if you're a Stones fan or maybe just a beginner Stones fan, because I have to think that there are still people like us at 15, 16 years old, although they're not listening to music that's 20 years old now, it's 40. They're still out there. And if there's kids listening to this, I would highly suggest listening to Exile. And if you want to get into music, it'll certainly...
If you want to get into the Stones, don't start with Exile because you won't be able to go higher than that.
Right.
So start somewhere else.
Yeah.
So you can only go up.
You start with Out of Our Heads or something like that.
Yeah, and then, great album.
Yeah. And it really is.
It's a great album, but Exile, it doesn't get higher.
Nothing is
so
Exile.
So rating-wise, would you call this album alive or dead? What do we give this album?
Cause of death?
Awesomeness.
Still alive. Yeah. We got a heartbeat.
Yes. On the coroner's table in the morgue.
This album just stood up and walked away.
Just stood up and walked out.
Yeah, this album stood up, walked down the street, did a concert.
I don't know if that's going to be our rating system from now on, alive or dead, because it's pretty binary.
Yeah.
But we'll have something. We will do something like that from now on.
Yeah, because we're just brainstorming right now. We're spitballing, as you would say. But once again, I'm Ryan. And
I'm Kurt.
And we are December's Children. And we end now our discussion of Exile on Main Street on the first episode of hopefully many on Album Corners.
Evening all.